You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Heave, gag, hurl, puke, spew, oh and yes, upchuck. Any way you say it, yuck. A pet can do any of the aforementioned for a myriad of reasons. Figuring out why can be as simple as taking away that fuzzy toy the pet insists on eating, or a frustrating process for the pet owner and veterinarian. It can even be life-threatening. Dr. Stan Marks is a board-certified veterinary internist and professor in the Department of Medicine and Epidemiology at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. He has a special interest in remedying retching. We're going to be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Petco, where the pets go. Petco, where the pets go.
Pet Life Radio has tail wagging, fur flying, fabulous deals for our listeners from Petco. Get $6 off your order of $60 or more, and up to 40% off the entire Petco site.
That's right.
But that's not all.
Because you're a Pet Life Radio listener, you'll also get free shipping on your order of $49 or more. $6 off, up to 40% off,
and free shipping
from Pet Life Radio and Petco. To get these awesome deals, go to PetcoDeals.com. That's PetcoDeals.com.
Petco, where the pets go.
I'm not much of a reader, but I do wish I were more well-read.
There are so many great books coming out. I wish I could find a way to keep up.
Audible.com makes it easy to stay well informed and catch up on your reading simply by listening. Audiobooks from Audible turn downtime into uptime. You'll be more productive and become well-read.
Now I'm able to catch up on all the great books I've been wanting to read.
With Audible, I feel smarter.
Pet Life Radio listeners, try Audible.com now and get your first 30 days of Audible Listener Gold Membership Plan free. And get a free audiobook. Choose from over 100,000 titles. To get this great deal, go to audibledeals.com. That's audibledeals.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Marks, this is a subject that isn't one of the most palatable, but it's so common. I was reading, according to veterinary pet insurance, that the number two reason why cats are presented to a veterinarian is for an upset tummy, and it's the number four reason for dogs. So you being in a referral practice at UC Davis, what are some of the more common causes you see being referred for vomiting?
No, that's a really good question. You know, we see a lot of dogs and cats that are referred to us from outside veterinary practitioners for this problem of either acute or chronic vomiting. And it's really important for all of us, first and foremost, to differentiate whether the animal is in fact truly vomiting or doing something that looks quite similar called regurgitation. These two problems, vomiting and regurgitation, are profoundly different in how they manifest and also what causes them, and most importantly, how we treat them. So if one focuses on vomiting, which is an active, neurologically mediated reflex, there are a plethora of causes. At least in cats, those causes are often due to kidney disease. They might also be due to pancreatitis, which is certainly a common disorder that we see in that particular species. We also see vomiting secondary to conditions of the stomach or the bowel, such as inflammatory bowel disease or even a cancer called lymphoma. And then less commonly, but still importantly, a number of different types of liver disease can also result in vomiting in cats. It's important to recognize some of the differences between cats and dogs. And so if one were to look at dogs and vomiting, well, dogs like to get into things. And so we always have to think about the ingestion of some type of toxic substance or even a foreign body, a small piece of bone, for example, or a ball, or some other foreign object that has been accidentally swallowed is an important consideration. But certainly kidney disease, pancreatitis, liver disease, and conditions of the bowel, such as inflammatory bowel disease or cancer, should also be considered in the dog.
Dr. Marks, what I find interesting sometimes is I'll try and take a good history when a pet comes in that's been doing some vomiting, especially with dogs, because I'll tell people dogs and cats, but it seems to be mostly dogs, eat first, think later, explore their environment by sticking things in their mouth and oftentimes swallowing. You think, oh, they'd never swallow that. But even things that they swallowed even months ago can still cause problems later. And that is mind-boggling, I think, for me and pet owners. How can a little piece of ball that it ate a month ago, you know, when they finally get it up and they go, oh, that was part of that little toy it ate a month ago. It's like, how could it be sitting around in the stomach for that long? How does that happen?
Well, that's a great question. Depending on the size or the structure of the actual foreign body that's being swallowed, I mean, we do sometimes see different objects, for example, being lodged in the outflow tract of the stomach. That is called the pylorus, which is actually a natural narrowing of the stomach before it actually joins up with the small intestine or small bowel. And sometimes these foreign objects can actually lodge in that area but act as a ball valve. So it's not causing a complete obstruction, which would be devastating and far more serious because food and liquid would not be able to pass from the stomach into the bowel. But here it's acting as a partial obstruction, moving to and fro, still allowing liquid and food to occasionally get through into the bowel for digestion. And some of the dogs that we see, as you said correctly, could have ingested a foreign object or foreign body weeks or months previously before it gets picked up by the owner because it got vomited out, or before we go fishing for it using endoscopy, a special tool that we can use, or unfortunately having to go in with surgery to open up the stomach to retrieve this abnormal foreign object. And of equal concern, some of these foreign objects can actually cause obstruction in the bowel. So here we're looking at a tube, essentially, that's really long and pliable. But if there is a foreign object that gets lodged in the bowel, it can be catastrophic for the animal because the bowel that is surrounding that foreign object can undergo what we call necrosis or death of those cells. It can ulcerate, and we can even see a perforation, a small hole that can develop in the actual lining of the bowel, and that can be life-threatening because bacteria and intestinal content can actually be forced through this little perforation or opening in the wall of the bowel, and that will result in rapid deterioration and even death of the animal.
Because so many dogs and cats, I'll tell people, you know, typical question, they come in for just a well baby checkup. Is there any coughing, sneezing, vomiting, or diarrhea? Go, oh, yes, my cat vomits. You know, hairballs, like, okay, if a cat doesn't vomit every once in a while, I think there's something wrong. So an occasional vomit for a pet doesn't really bother me.
Right.
But it's that, when do you say, this is something I really should investigate? What's your usual recommendation?
Now, that's a very, very good question. I want owners to be aware of when to get concerned. When is a red flag going up in their beloved pet that is vomiting? And when can you sort of blow it off and say, been doing that once every 3-4 weeks for the last 2 years. That's okay. Versus, this is much, much more concerning, and I need to think about seeing my veterinarian. There are a couple of take-home messages here that I'd like to emphasize. And the first is, what is the overall appearance of my dog or cat? Is my dog or cat eating readily, or has it become inappetent? It doesn't want to eat any further. It didn't have breakfast this morning. That's huge. Number two, what's the overall demeanor of my dog or cat? Is it active? Is it playful? Is it interactive? Versus, nope, it's a lot more quiet today, or my cat's become more reclusive, and it's hiding from me, and it's not interacting the way it usually does. And owners are so attuned to these subtle changes in behavior that can usually pick up quite quickly on when their cat or even their dog is not quite as active or vibrant as it should be. The other important thing that I always want to emphasize is when an owner notices dark, what we call coffee ground, in the vomitus itself. So in other words, we are very worried now about dark blood in this material that's been vomited up. That is a huge red flag, and they need to seek attention as quickly as possible, because that's usually seen in association with some kind of bleeding ulcer, either a tumor, a mass, or medications, for example, aspirin or other non-steroidal drugs that can also cause an erosion in the lining of the stomach or the bowel. Certainly the physical appearance of the actual material itself is important. And also, if their pet, if they can check the gums of the animal itself, the gums look pale to an owner or yellow and discolored to an owner, that also is a reason to have their pet examined sooner rather than later. And the other important point I should mention too is, you know, for those owners who have pets that vomit with some regularity, you know, my cat vomits once a month or so, but it's perfectly fine. It's always a hairball. I've got a beautiful domestic long-haired cat. That's one thing. But if they notice the windows of normalcy becoming shorter and shorter over ensuing months, they should also have their cat evaluated, because it's very possible that the cat that's grooming itself fastidiously and has been vomiting once a month, but now the windows are occurring every 3 weeks and then 2 weeks, and finally my cat's vomiting 3-4 times a week. That shortening of that normal window is certainly a big red flag, and it's possible that there may well be some underlying condition in the stomach or bowel that is preventing this swallowed hair from moving normally down the stomach into the bowel and out the other end of the animal.
Dr. Marks, I think this is marvelous, because yes, you're saying that subtle can be significant. I really like it when a client keeps a pet health diary. So they're marking down things like, oh yeah, you know, vomited today. That's nice. You know, what was in it? Or they're seeing that it's happening more frequently. And I'll always say, and you brought up a good point of maybe it's aspirin they're taking or non-steroidals, which veterinarians are giving more frequently. But sometimes people try to treat on their own. They heard it from a friend, they read it on the internet, they're using medication from one of the other pets, and now you're seeing a stomach upset, a GI upset. I'll always say, ask your veterinarian first. Most of the time, veterinarians are willing to give you some guidance over the phone. Or if you notice any problems, stop whatever medications it's on, even if it's antibiotics, call your veterinarian. Just don't try to continue going, we'll just tough it out.
That's a great point that you've mentioned. I couldn't agree with you more. And in fact, the drugs that we often use ourselves in the clinic, this could be in a human hospital or in a veterinary hospital, but the very same medication that we use every single day for trying to help a patient or treat an animal may very well be the same drugs that are in fact the cause of the vomiting in that patient. And so when we see animals vomiting in the hospital that are inpatients or hospitalized patients, we are always asking ourselves, what medications is that animal receiving? And antibiotics, as you correctly stated, a number of different antibiotics can certainly trigger a vomiting reflex in a cat or a dog quite commonly.
Now, Dr. Marks, you've been talking all this time really about vomiting, but you had mentioned earlier on, oh yes, regurgitation. And I think for a client, it's still this stuff that's on the floor that I now need to clean up. Mm-hmm. What's the difference? How do you describe vomiting versus regurgitation? Because I had a black lab with a condition that we're going to talk about, Mega esophagus, that had regurgitation. But even I, being a veterinarian, watching this dog, look like vomiting to me. Mm-hmm. So what's the difference?
Yeah, no, there is a huge difference between vomiting and regurgitation. I think importantly, most owners may not actually witness their pet in the act, so to speak, but may well see the evidence thereafter. So they're picking up this bile-stained material on a carpet or they might be seeing this partially digested kibble, you know, on their beautiful linoleum floor in their home, and they have no idea which of those two different processes is in fact ongoing. And when we see cats and dogs with this particular problem, 90% of our owners or clients are saying, my cat or my dog was throwing up, sort of a non-specific generic term for it's bringing material up and I don't know whether it's vomiting or regurgitation. And of equal importance, when an animal is in fact regurgitating, most owners will say, my pet is vomiting. And so for a veterinarian, and certainly for an owner, it is pivotal that the differences between vomiting and regurgitation are well understood, because, as I said, their causes and their treatments could not be more different. And so vomiting, in fact, is an active, neurologically mediated reflex. In other words, it needs vital centers in the brain to undergo this particular reflex, and there are a number of different causes for initiation of that vomiting reflex. And those different causes are conditions affecting the stomach and the bowel, including the large bowel or colon, and a number of other organs that are outside the actual gastrointestinal tract, such as the kidney or the liver or the small little adrenal gland, which can also be associated with a condition called Addison's disease, and that can cause vomiting as well. In contrast, regurgitation is a passive process. It is not neurologically mediated, and it is usually a reflection of a problem in the animal's esophagus or feeding tube. So the tube that joins the back of the throat with the stomach can certainly undergo a number of different disease processes, and these will usually manifest in this very passive or involuntary process called regurgitation, where you'll see a dog or a cat extend its head and neck, and you'll hear a bloop as this oftentimes sausage shape, but not always, material is expelled that may be covered in mucus. It may have undigested food in it as well, and it usually is not yellow in color or bile stained. And in contrast, when an owner sees their pet, cat or dog, vomiting, it is an active process, and so it is almost always preceded by very active abdominal contractions and heaving. That, to me, is arguably one of the most important features that we always inquire about is, did you witness your dog or cat going up, you know, the active expulsion of this, and the owner says, yes, that's exactly what he did. And that helps us make that pivotal differentiation.
Well, Dr. Stan Marks may have turned many of our stomachs as we're listening to this. So catch your breath, take a drink of water if your stomach's up for it. We're going to take a short break and be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Introducing the new Brett Michaels Pets Rock Collection, exclusively at PetSmart. I created it for the pets that rock your world.
Shop the Brett Michaels Pets Rock Collection and celebrate PetSmart's 25th anniversary with up to 25% off thousands of items on the PetSmart site. Plus free shipping on orders of $49 or more. Go to PetSmartDeal.com. That's PetSmartDeal.com. PetSmartDeal.com.
Dyson.
The new Dyson Animal Vacs are powerful bagless upright vacuums for homes with pets. Air muscle and radial root cyclone technology generates the strongest suction power to powerfully remove dust, dirt, and pet hair from the home or car. To order your Dyson Animal Vac, go to DysonDeals.com. DysonDeals.com to order your Dyson Animal Vac today.
Dyson, music to your ears.
Hi, I'm Lisa Smith Putnam, the host of the new and exciting show, Your Pets, My Dogs, here on Pet Life Radio. Your Pets, My Dogs will feature celebrity interviews, we'll talk to everyday pet owners, and more. Listen, I am here to entertain you each and every week, right here on Pet Life Radio. Again, that's Your Pets, My Dogs. I'm your host, Lisa Smith Putnam.
Your Pets, My Dogs.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets
on Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Marks, this is something I have to laugh because veterinarians, you know, can talk about subjects that might be a little bit disconcerting to the average pet owner. But I'm really surprised the number of pet owners that bring me in samples of vomitus and poop, and they've all turned into scatologists. You know, they know their pet's poop better than anyone else. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of like being a parent of a small child. You just kind of get used to it. So you're talking about regurgitation being a passive kind of a process, sausage shape type of a structure that you're going to find on the floor, usually not bile tinged. What can cause some of this regurgitation problem? Because I know you're really into swallowing disorders of pets.
Right, right. And so, you know, if one thinks carefully about arguably a reflex that is so essential to life, the swallowing reflex, it's one that we do subconsciously without even thinking about it. That reflex, which is a very complex one, is going to involve a number of vital structures, including the mouth, the throat, the feeding tube or esophagus, and then the juncture between the esophagus and the stomach itself. And so if there is a problem along any of those specific anatomic regions, one can have difficulty in swallowing, and one can certainly see evidence of regurgitation itself. Now, if you cannot chew your food properly, let's say that you have dental disease or you have severe inflammation in your mouth, you've got ulcers on your tongue, for example, that will prevent one from being able to chew their food normally because of the discomfort or because of their dental disease. If you cannot chew your kibble normally, you are going to be challenged to swallow that food down your feeding tube into the esophagus. And so for veterinarians as well as owners, first and foremost, a really good evaluation of the mouth, looking for evidence of any tongue ulceration, any masses that we can see in the throat itself. In Northern California, we see lots of foxtails. These can also lodge right at the back by the tonsils, and that can be very difficult to see. But for regurgitation itself, we generally are talking about a disorder affecting the esophagus.
Foxtails, Dr. Marks, for some people who may be living back east and listening to us right now, there's those little plant-ons, weeds, that tend to get in your socks. They go one direction, very pointy. And besides getting in the throat, can get in the eyes, the ears, can get all over and even penetrate through the skin. So they're nasty little devils, needing to make sure you really check your pets out well after they've been out for a walk.
That's a great point. In fact, we always say to our students here who we train, you know, when you find a foxtail, you know, in between the toes, for example, you better make sure that you find a second one, you know, or the third one, because there's oftentimes more than one. And so, you know, in dogs, we're going to be looking down the ears. We can look in between the feet, as we said as well. But these go in one direction and one direction only, and they can penetrate very, very well and result in tremendous discomfort and a lot of expense for the owner when trying to remove these and even find them. But if we move on to the actual conditions affecting the esophagus in dogs or even cats, we can sort of generally categorize those into one of four or so different conditions for the most part. The most common condition affecting the esophagus that we see here at UC Davis is a condition called mega esophagus. And as the name implies, mega means giant or large esophagus. And this is a reflection of an abnormally dilated esophagus in its entirety or a portion of the esophagus that is abnormally dilated. And we can see this present from birth in certain dog breeds, or more commonly, it can be an acquired phenomenon where you have a perfectly healthy, happy adult dog, 4-year-old, 5-year-old dog, no potent medical problems whatsoever. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, my dog begins to regurgitate. That is classic. And that is not uncommon at all. And we tend to see that particular phenomenon occur more commonly in large or giant breed dogs. So German Shepherds, Great Danes, Irish Setters, and Labrador Retrievers. I'm not saying these are the poster children, because these are some popular breeds as well, but I would certainly say that those four breeds are highly overrepresented when we talk about megaesophagus, in particular the acquired form in the dog. And what's intriguing is that megaesophagus is far, far more common in dogs than what it is in the cat. And interestingly, and we aren't really sure of these reasons, swallowing disorders in general are far more common in dogs than they are in cats as well.
So with these swallowing disorders, I'd expect, yes, you know, that they're going to regurgitate. The owner's not going to like to see that. Probably having some weight loss. Thankfully, this is not a problem I see that commonly. I see, you know, an acute vomiting. I ate something I wasn't supposed to. But what are some of the signs that you're also seeing there at your referral practice at UC Davis with these dogs with megaesophagus or other swallowing disorders?
Well, there are a number of different manifestations for these swallowing disorders in both the dog and the cat. And certainly one big one for people to be aware of is coughing. And these animals are coughing simply because they are aspirating either water or their food that they have ingested. And that is a huge problem, and it is an important cause of euthanasia or death in these animals, as well as also an important cause of morbidity in these animals. But if you go on, besides the coughing from aspiration and pneumonia, we can see malnutrition, because these animals are unable to, in fact, ingest sufficient calories to maintain their energy needs because of their abnormal esophagus. And so an animal that is losing weight and coughing intermittently certainly should warn their owner of the potential of something like megaesophagus. If you look at some of the swallowing disorders, though, that can affect the back of the throat, then certainly an owner should be aware of, on the lookout for, an animal that might be gagging or retching. We also sometimes see animals that will repeatedly swallow. So the animal goes to the food bowl, hungry usually, will take in a mouthful of food, chew the food, swallow it. But because there is a problem at the back of the throat affecting the swallowing reflex, that food is not going into the feeding tube as it usually should. And so that animal will swallow unsuccessfully. Food may fall out of the mouth. The animal will then swallow a second, third time, unsuccessfully, try and chew the food further. That is still in the back of the throat. And this cycle will be repeated again and again and again. Owners can also see animals that have increased salivation. So if you see a dog or a cat that is salivating for no known reason or cause, you have to think about a problem affecting the swallowing reflex as well. So those would be arguably the most important manifestations of a swallowing disorder in both the dog and the cat.
Now, treatment would seem, of course, to find out what's causing it and correct it. But there are times when you can't correct it. I had a black lab that had a congenital problem, something he was born with, and it was what's called a persistent right or aortic arch, for those that are listening. And this was a band from the heart that during the pup's development, while it was still inside the uterus, this band cut around the esophagus, the feeding tube, and then when the pup was still nursing, not a problem, milk was able to go through, but as soon as it was weaned, here went this regurgitation. It was surgically corrected, but the esophagus was already damaged, and he lived to be 15 years, but it was 15 years of trying to feed him so carefully. What are some of the new, really cutting-edge things that you've been able to do at Davis for these pets with swallowing disorders?
Right. Well, you know, the different therapeutic endeavors really do depend on the diagnosis. And so, you know, for us, it is critically important to be able to pinpoint the specific diagnosis as quickly and as non-invasively as possible. Because the therapy for a dog with a megaesophagus, for example, is profoundly different to the treatment for a dog that has a condition that is preventing the animal from swallowing normally because of some kind of obstruction at the back of the throat. And likewise, we see a lot of breeds, particularly English bulldogs, French bulldogs, Boston terriers, pugs, these are breeds that can also be predisposed to a condition called a hiatal hernia, where the stomach transiently is pushed into the chest cavity, causing reflux of food and water from the stomach up the esophagus. And so really, when it comes to us using medical or surgical interventions for these animals, we do everything we can to the specific cause of the problem. Now, what we have been able to do, fortunately, through collaborations with colleagues at the UC Davis School of Medicine, is some very, very innovative cutting-edge procedures that use a CO2 or carbon dioxide laser for performing procedures at the back of the throat. So as another breed example, we see miniature dachshunds in particular that have an inability to relax the sphincter that's at the top of the esophagus. It's almost like an obstruction. So the animal tries to eat and swallow, but the food or water is almost hitting a closed door because the opening of the esophagus does not relax. So we have been able to do a direct laser procedure on the muscle that's abnormal at the back of the throat, which is much less invasive, with a much quicker recovery and a better outcome than the outdated approach that we used to do by making a large incision on the outside of the neck.
I find it fascinating right now. You're talking about doing this in collaboration with the medical school there. So are swallowing disorders that common in humans also?
Absolutely. Swallowing disorders are profoundly common in people. And in fact, the problem actually occurs in increasing frequency with advancing age. And in fact, what's really fascinating to both of us, my colleague and I, are the differences and the differences in causation for swallowing disorders when comparing dogs to people. A lot of overlap, but certainly when you look at people, the classic causes there are going to be Parkinson's disease, strokes that a person might have had affecting swallowing, head and neck cancer, where a surgeon has gone in to do a radical excision and then follow that up with radiation therapy. And the radiation therapy can cause scarring or fibrosis to the area at the back of the throat that will affect swallowing. So that is important and common in people. And the other thing which I find fascinating, too, is that in people, esophageal cancer is much, much more common in people than what it is in the dog. So, yes, there's some important differences, but so are there some huge similarities. And in fact, my colleague and I have been working actively on hiatal hernias that are common in both dogs and people. The disorder affecting the upper esophageal sphincter that we see less commonly, certainly, but well described in people as well. And we're also trying to look at less invasive ways of trying to treat dogs that have a narrowing in the esophagus called an esophageal stricture that might be from caustic or acid reflux causing inflammation to the lining of the esophagus with secondary stricture formation.
You've done so much, and you're also, besides just working in the clinics, also producing a video right now, Hunger Pains. We have a few more minutes. Quickly, tell me a little bit about this video and where people are going to be able to watch it.
Great. Thank you for asking that. You know, we've just actually wrapped up a wonderful documentary. This is a 12-minute documentary that features four beloved pets that each has, you know, its own unique swallowing problem. And this documentary sort of highlights the plight of these beautiful animals and the incredible power of the human-animal bond as these people went to all different lengths to try and remedy their pets. And so it's focusing on the actual disorders. It's focusing on what we have been able to do with the School of Vet Med, as well as the One Health Initiative, which combines the skill sets and the talents of colleagues from the medical schools, veterinary schools, and in the environment, all in an effort to make this a better planet. And that documentary is about to be uploaded in the next 2 days or so, and it's going to be on YouTube and Vimeo, where people will be able to access it and just simply type in Hunger Pains as your keyword.
So if people needed to learn more about swallowing disorders and vomiting, is there a site they can go to that they can learn more about this?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, you know, people who have questions about swallowing disorders in general or vomiting are welcome to contact me here at the UC Davis School of Vet Med, and they can simply access the UC Davis Vet Med information directly via our website, which is available online. I also have a gastroenterology research lab that people can access too through the School of Vet Med site. And then we are actively working on a new site that is going to be focusing on swallowing disorders in dogs as well, that we are hoping to have completed within the next several weeks.
Well, I hope everyone can keep down all the information that Dr. Marks has told us about today. It is interesting. It's sad to see that too many pets are euthanized when maybe there was something that could be done. So if you have questions about your own pets, best thing to do is talk to your primary care veterinarian. They can always refer you if necessary, maybe to someone such as Dr. Marks. So again, thank you so much for being my guest today.
My pleasure, and thank you so much. I really enjoyed this interview.
Great. I have a feeling there's a lot more information that you have, so we're going to have to do it again. And speaking of again, please tune in again next week when you can learn more about how you can be the best pet owner possible on The Pet Doctor here on Pet Life Radio. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.